You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network. I'm Dan Gould. Several hundred Charlottesville and Albemarle County residents turned up Thursday evening for a town hall meeting to discuss alternatives to the construction of a grade-separated interchange at the intersection of Ryle Road and U.S. 29 in Albemarle County. The meeting was sponsored by Albemarle County Supervisor Ken Boyd and Smart 29. The meeting was held at Sutherland Middle School on January 29, 2015, and was hosted by Supervisor Boyd. Following the presentation, questions were taken from the audience. Our podcast is entitled, Town Hall Meeting Considers U.S. 29 Alternatives. Here's Ken Boyd.
All right, I want to go ahead and get started because I want to try and keep this on the time frame here so we can get you all out of here at 8:30 as we had planned to do. There's a couple of introductions that I want to make. First of all, I'm Ken Boyd. I'm the supervisor from the Ribanda District. We are in the Ribanda District now, and so I'm just proud. This is one of our fine middle schools that's in my district, and I appreciate very much them hosting us here tonight. There is some introductions I wanted to do, but to join us in the audience out here is Ann Malik, who is on the Board of Supervisors for the Whitehall District. In addition to Ann, we have Roger Thomas, who is the Ryle District. I saw Dwayne Snow in here somewhere. Is Dwayne here? Yeah. All the way in the back. Dwayne wasn't expecting you to come up here in the front. Our format tonight is going to be mainly, I'm going to be listening. I'm not going to be lecturing you or talking to you about what the issue is tonight, which is the grade separated interchange. I do want to say that I, complete disclosure, that I'm the only member of the Board of Supervisors who voted against this particular Solutions 29 connection. And so I'm not here to make any kind of effort that I'm speaking on behalf of the board. I'm speaking on behalf of myself, and I'm telling you what I feel and what I believe about this project, which I think it is not the right thing for us to do. I think the grade separated interchange will be a disaster to our community. I think it's going to cause us to lose tax revenues from our businesses that will be destroyed. I think it's going to impact neighborhoods because people are going to have traffic diverted, not just during construction, but people get used to a way of traveling around town and they'll keep those habits and continue to do that. And I think it's going to be a detriment to the transportation both through and around this particular intersection. So we're not here to talk about a bypass tonight. I want to make that clear at the very beginning. We're here to talk about why we don't think that the grade separated interchange makes any sense, and why we don't think that's to be done. Now the Smart 29 group, who you've seen throughout the evening tonight, who brought us some of their charts and displays and information over there, they're a grassroots organization. They actually approached me and said, would you be willing to give us the opportunity to tell our side of the story? And you know, there's an old saying that says that it goes, figures don't lie, but liars can figure. Right? I'm not trying to accuse anybody of lying here, but what I am trying to say is that when you take a given set of numbers, you can massage those in any way to interpret it the way you want to. So there's different interpretation of those numbers. What you're going to hear tonight is the facts as presented by VDOT, and the interpretation has been done by our speakers here and what it's going to mean to us. And we have three different people who are going to start off tonight and be our speakers. We've got Maggie Van Winkle, Peter Chandler, and Yana Gamble. And if you all want to come up, I'm going to pass the mic back and forth to you here. And Peter is here. Okay. A couple of housekeeping items while they're getting set, because we only got one mic that's working, so we're going to have to pass it around. Hopefully you saw the flyer that talks about an upcoming meeting for the Board of Supervisors on February the 4th. It's starting at 7 o'clock for public input. I would encourage you to come out there, because I'm going to make a motion that we take a step back and that we do what our comprehensive plan tells us to do, and that we study this with a small area plan like we were supposed to do according to the comprehensive plan. If you didn't get one of those sheets, I'm sure that Laura would be glad to give you one to fill it out. We also have a petition. There's been some discussion over how many numbers are on, how many people are on this petition. I think it's somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000. We encourage you to sign that. Again, Laura has got copies of that if you like it. We also have, some of you got, I didn't get in my house, because I'm not a long ways from the infected area, the door hangers here, which also have got a card on it. If you wish to send it to the governor or to one of your supervisors, you may do that. So I would encourage you to do those three things. Ladies, how are we going to do this? Who wants to go first? Maggie?
I've been a resident of Albemarle County for 9.5 years. We moved from Northern Virginia, and we followed our daughter and her family here. I have 3 grandsons, and so I'm speaking.
Stand up, please.
I am speaking to you as a senior citizen, retired grandmother, and somebody.
Just stand up.
Oh, okay. That's it. And from my perspective, we're looking at implementing an idea that was devised 25 years ago. Well, a great deal has changed in this area in 25 years. 25 years ago, my daughter was going to the University of Virginia and not the mother of a 16-year-old. So a plan devised then is not necessarily a good plan for now. I travel 29 daily. Both directions, all the time. I'm going to both sides of 29. I frequent businesses on both sides. I transport grandchildren all over Albemarle County. And I don't see any problem with Ryo right now. In fact, I travel regularly to University of Virginia Hospital where I volunteer, and it takes me 15 minutes to get there from Polo Grounds Road. So I wouldn't say this is a real bottleneck. The real bottleneck, if there is a bottleneck, is at Hydraulic and getting on to the 250 bypass. What really concerns me is what's going to happen when, if this thing goes through, we're going to have the local traffic, which as I understand it represents about 90% of the traffic on 29, is going to only have about half of the lanes available to them. We're not going to be able to cross back and forth. So if I want to go to ACAC, for instance, and then I want to stop over to the Kroger, I think there's a good chance I won't be able to get over to that lane to make the left-hand turn. It's already a difficult thing to do right now. So, and I really don't understand why we are spending all of this money precipitously, really, without actually having investigated what the conditions are now. As I understand it, the traffic that is local is only 10%. Some people may think the tractor trailers are actually going to be taken off of the road. Well, bad news. The tractor trailers are actually local as well. So, that's kind of my perspective.
Okay, we've heard from a retiree and a resident in the neighborhoods that are going to be impacted by this. Now I want to talk to a soccer mom. And Anna, thank you for coming.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Yana. I am your soccer mom, literally. I'm married to a soccer dad also. I've been in Charlottesville since 1997. I came to the University of Virginia to play tennis from Boston, and I never left. I just fell in love with this town, and I felt that it was a place I wanted to stay and raise my family, ultimately. I have a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old, and we live just at the edge of Earliesville, so right on the border of Charlottesville-Earliesville. So I travel 29 to go downtown, and I even take 29 to go to Barracks Road because I find it easier than Earliesville Road, believe it or not. We did have a hiatus. We spent about 3 years abroad fairly recently, came back almost 3 years ago, And to be honest with you, when we came back, I found that the traffic was better over the time that we left. We left in 2008 and returned in 2012. So a project like this, for me, is a big surprise because I never thought Rio Road that intersection was a problem. I've never experienced a problem there. And I traveled at all times of the day, multiple times a day. So to me, $84 million without a study is just absolutely preposterous.
Right. Yeah, and not even a small area study.
So far, I've heard arguments from VDOT being that the reason for the GSI being traffic and accidents. I believe the evidence is that traffic flow has decreased and accidents have decreased as well. So to me, that does not pass the common sense test. Specifically that, you know, since there hasn't been a study in today's conditions, under today's circumstances, considering today's traffic flows and considering the decline in the traffic. So I really think that before they jump into this and disregard the community, except for Mr. Boyd here, thank you very much, sir. I personally believe that we need more people like you in local politics that have the integrity. For what's right for the constituents and not for political reasons. So I really appreciate that.
All right, now we've heard from our retiree and from the soccer mom. Our third panelist up here is, how many people have ever been a customer at Chandler's Bakery?
Yeah.
Now, this is a family business that's been in this community for a long time, and I want to talk to Peter Chandler and get him to tell you about what he thinks is going to impact is going to be on his business.
Well, thank you all. I just can't believe the size of the crowd. I expected a lot of people here. I know the Smart 29 group worked very hard to mobilize people, but this is a heartwarming group. Thank you all for coming. I speak to you not only as a participant in a small business. My daughter owns a bakery. I speak to you as a resident of Albemarle County. I see this monstrosity that is projected for 29 and Rio as a hindrance to the general community and also to small business and large business. Everybody is going to suffer. This idea was floated 20 years ago. It was put aside. There's been a movement of people floating it all along, and it's finally risen to the surface. How it got here? It got here in a very subtle way, almost surreptitiously, but it is here. And we in the Smart 29 group see it as a menace. It's going to be a menace to the people because as drivers coming up and down 29, there will be limitations in what you can do as a driver. You will no longer have that ability maybe to take a left turn into Albemarle Square or into Fashion Square Mall. You will be forced into making right turns only. And if you are an impulse buyer and you somehow say, wow, gee, I think I want to stop in over at Albemarle Square, and you're heading south, you are in trouble. You're going to be faced with doing a huge roundabout up to Rio 29 and in the side door. So it's going to be a mess. There are other safety issues. Secretary of Transportation Lane has cited the dangers of the accident rate on 29 and Rio. The accident rate has actually gone down in the last few years since the coordinated lights, the cameras. The cameras have reduced actually that accident rate. So that is almost a non-issue. There are a host of other safety issues that could be addressed with the new layout and with the new interchange. I am not going to try to speak to those because I don't have the necessary expertise. But there are arguments. There are good arguments against this. As a small business person, I have to tell you that my daughter, who is the owner of Chandler's Bakery, is right now in fear. She just recently moved her bakery. She has spent an awful lot of money in supporting that move. And I do her bookkeeping for her, so I know where she comes from. And from the money point of view, I can tell you that if we sustain in 2016, if we sustain a 20% drop in revenues, we are in trouble. We are going to be in trouble. And I am not alone. We are located in Rio Hill Center. We're a little bit away from Ground Zero. The folks at Ground Zero, the four quadrants, they are going to die. And nobody seems to care. Nobody seems to have a real solution. I have heard the county supervisors and others saying that they are coming around to assist small business. Well, I don't know if that's happened yet. Let's hope that it does happen. But I will say that it takes more than an agile mind to bring in customers. And when you have people who will avoid this location because of the traffic, no amount of advertising, no amount of expertise, you can get Harvard MBAs in here and they will not be able to bring the customers. So customers are not, they don't come out of thin air. Customers are developed. And if you do a good job in your business and you satisfy your customer, that person will be back. But put a traffic jam in front of that person every day for a couple of years or more, and you know, you may just lose that customer because he may be so frustrated that he will go elsewhere. 103 days, Rio Road will be closed, crossing 29, for 103 days. That is going to be a tough nut to crack. So thank you all for being here. Your presence shows the support. Please get the word out. Please talk to your friends, your neighbors, write to the governor, write to your congressman. Do whatever you think is you can do. But this thing must be stopped. Yes. Thank you.
Statement that I'm not sure I really made. I was not expecting to say anything until just a little bit ago. And it's not really only the businesses that are being hurt, but also the customers they serve. Because I think all of us really appreciate businesses such as Chandler's and ACAC and Jump and the place for the kids. I've been to all these places before. As a grandmother, you've done it all. Little Jim. And I think many people don't realize how this is going to impact it because it's not just Albemarle County and Charlottesville. Many of the people that come frequent these businesses live in Greene County, they live in Madison County, they travel quite some distance. So I hope there's something we can all do to stop this from happening and find other solutions. Thank you.
I'd like to ask our team for our three heartfelt stories. Grant is going to present us, you know, we didn't want to be, or they didn't want to be, the Smart 29 people don't want to be someone who just says no. So what they've done is they've started the process that we should be doing at the Board of Supervisors, which is to start the process of doing a small area study of this particular intersection, which has involved the community, the businesses, the neighbors, the people who eat, shop, and play in this area. And this is what our comprehensive plan calls for, is for this to be done. Not by an independent group, but by the supervisors and by our staff. So I'm going to turn it over to Grant and let him tell you his story.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Ian, for turning up tonight. And Rodney, former board member. If I'm missing somebody out there, I'm sorry. My name's Grant Gamble. I'm a part of the Smart 29 group, but I probably should tell you sort of how I got here, because I'm obviously not from around these parts. Pick that up pretty quickly. I moved here in 1997. And I came in to do a two-month consulting contract for ACAC. I had no idea what Charlottesville was about, but very quickly fell in love with this town. When Phil Wendell said to me, "Do you want to stay on?" I was delighted, because Charlottesville to me is just an incredible place to live. So when this project came up, and Phil said, "Can you look into this for us?" Because it strikes me that this is going to be a problem for Old Mile Square, but more than that, it strikes me it's going to be a problem for the community. And so I went on a mission, and my wife would tell you, when I'm on a mission, you better watch out. I started doing a lot of studying, so you know, I got all the studies on this project and started reading them. That was my bedtime reading, so I gave up fiction for a little while. And I learned a lot about it. And in the process, It changed me from being there because Phil had asked me to look into it to being there because it really stuck. Can't put it any other way, I'm sorry. So I'm going to just go through a slideshow with you now, and I apologise because there'll be some intricacies in this that, you know, you might say, "Hey, I don't really need to know this," but one of the things that the Smart 29 group's been accused of is making stuff up, fluffing stuff up, and I want to sort of show you where we're coming from, what we've established, and how we feel about this, and how this affects you, most importantly, how this affects you and your family. So, firstly, this is not an attempt to rekindle the bypass. Oh yeah, Ken said, could you hold for questions at the end? We will have a lot of time for questions. You don't have to stick around late 30 unless you want to listen to questions, okay? So it's not going to go that late, but so just hold questions if you would, please. So it's not a pro-bypass group, Smart 29, so that's not our agenda. Secondly, it's not simply about the construction period, it's about the legacy that this GSI will leave behind, this grade separated intersection will leave behind for the community. But trust me, the construction period, it's going to hurt, and there's no question about that. Just look at McIntyre. McIntyre is a $34 million project, by the way. So this is an $84 million project. So think about the scale of McIntyre and the disruption that you suffered. I suffer it every day because I have to drive through it. And I can tell you that it's not about 103 days. This project's actually over a two-year project. So to be told that, you know, it's 103-day disruption is absolute bullshit, and I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. The other thing is, and you guys are a testament to me, I was sitting here and the seats were pretty much full, and then I stood up and went, where did all these people come from? This is not a small group of business owners that are upset about losing a few dollars out of their back pocket. This is a community that's coming together to say, hey, this is not something we ask for, this is not something we want, this is not something we need. And what we're asking right now, because there really isn't much chance of this thing stopping immediately, we're just saying, just press the pause button. We're saying to the Board of Supervisors, please press the pause button long enough to listen a little bit more to the community constituency and do a little bit more research around one of these alternatives that we've come up with, and there might be even better ones than we've come up with. Let's give it a chance. I know we've been talking about this. I know everybody's got bypass fatigue. Okay, I know, it's been in the papers for 20, 30 years plus. This is not about bypassing, it shouldn't be, but I honestly think that what's driving this comes from that. But most importantly, how does this affect you? And we're going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about that a little bit tonight. And this is one way it's going to affect you. There's no question that people are going to be cutting through Carsbrook. There's no question that Earlsville Road that we frequent is going to be significantly affected by this. There's going to be a lot more load on Earlsville Road. There's no question that Forest Lake's going to be impacted. You know, you guys have to drive through this monstrosity unless you go all the way around by Earlsville Road, which, again, people suffer. The other thing that's going to happen is there's going to be delays. I don't care what VDOT says. When VDOT says they're going to do an $84 million project on the second biggest intersection on our road, and they tell you there's not going to be delays, I'm sorry, that loses me. And the other one is that it is going to impact business. Okay? And Maggie was absolutely right. You know, businesses are about customers. You don't get successful in business unless you take care of your customers. So let's look at VDOT's side of this. The state of need. They say that Rio Road is a failing intersection and that will fail. They've got projections that indicate this intersection will fail in the future. Okay, and they keep on talking about 2025 and 2040. This intersection is going to fail. They also describe it as having both high and or escalating crashes. I've heard both of those sound bites. What they want to do, their stated purpose, and they talk about purpose and need, okay? Their stated purpose is to move traffic more efficiently through one, okay, of the most congested intersections on Route 29. That sounds ominous to me. One of the most congested intersections. So what's going to be next? So is this you being held up for 2 years? Or is this you being held up for another 2 years and another? Is this a 10-year deal? And that is likely what's going to happen because this is going to implode. When Rio frees up, it's going to put pressure on Woodbrook and on Shop as well. There's no question about that. Anybody ever have problems at Woodbrook now?
Yeah.
Hey? Yeah. If I'm going north trying to turn to Lowe's, not a good story. I'm out in the fourth lane. So let's look at the numbers just quickly. These are VDOT numbers. I didn't make these up, didn't pull them out of my back pocket. Joel D'Annunzio from VDOT gave me these numbers. He's the regional head of VDOT, okay? So I take it that they're pretty good numbers and that they're VDOT's numbers because it didn't come from anybody else. And when you put these numbers on a graph, and this is what traffic did up until 2002, it was going up and it was going up pretty heavily. This is what happened in 2002, suddenly it started going down. Why? Well, I can tell you one reason why. We shopped on Amazon.com this Christmas almost exclusively. Probably saved us 20 or 30 trips. I know friends that used to come to Lowe's down at Woodbrook, and now they go off to Ruckersville. I know folks out of Zion's Crossroad that didn't have a choice but to come into town to do stuff, and now they've got a Walmart out there. I know people at Crozet that pop over to Waynesboro. It's become a little shopping mecca. You guys know what I'm talking about. This is what's happening. People are going to other locations. So you can understand this decompressing, but this is just not a phenomenon around Rio Road. This has happened across America. Traffic's going down across America. Traffic's going down across the state, and it's going down in Charlottesville. Your town is slowing down a little bit with the traffic. Let's look at the intersection. Here's the intersection at peak hour, which is supposedly the real problem time. And again, we go back to 2005 and go through to today, and it's on a slight downward trend. Okay, that's a peak hour. So we're not just picking the good times of the day, we're saying, okay, this is the worst time of the day. Now, if Places 29 were correct in their assumptions, it would be 40% higher than it is today. Because they made a projection in 2005, it's going to go up by 40% by now, and it hasn't. Actually, 39.5%, sorry. Now, VDOT's projecting that it's going to go up by about 33% from this point forward. So we asked the gentleman, Mr. Shuket, who's the facilitator for VDOT, why? What's driving that? We haven't received an answer to that question. We'd love one. Here's the other piece, the accidents. And this is part of what infuriates me. This is from Albemarle County, by the way, and this is their statistics department. In fact, Carter Johnson sent me this email with these numbers on it, okay? Albemarle County Police keep the statistics, so I trust that their statistics on accidents are correct because they give them to VDOT in turn. So, here's the numbers for the accidents at that intersection. It doesn't look like it's going up to me. So something's a little bit fishy. Now, they have accused us of fabricating these numbers or inflating these numbers. If you want to read the email, I'll give you a copy of it. Or if you want to go to speak to Carter Johnson and ask her for those numbers, she'll give them to you. What frustrates me is she's not... VDOT is not just lying to me. VDOT is not just bluffing us up to make this appear to be the right thing to do. They're doing this to you. And they're doing this to your family. They're inflicting this monstrosity on you. And if anybody is fabricating numbers or pushing numbers around, it's the sound bites I'm hearing from the other side. So let's look at this intersection. I'll just orient you a little bit. This is the intersection that's planned. This is Albemarle Square here, so ACAC is down here. You've got Fashion Square, Hardee's, Wendy's is in here. So everybody got a picture of where we're at? Yep. And essentially what this GSI is going to do this, it's going to speed you up to the next traffic light. $8 million is going to speed you up to the next traffic light. And when you get to the next traffic light, it's going to be a little bit worse than it was before because now people have to make U-turns. Because you can't turn into Albemarle Square anymore, you can't turn into Fashion Square, you can't turn left into V&B, you can't turn into Goodwill anymore. So your access has been denied. Your access, my access, our access has been denied. And the problem with that too is, and I think Maggie said it really well, or it might have been Peter, I can't remember, that somebody mentioned that two lanes for local traffic, two lanes for the through traffic. Now some of us are going to drive through, understood. But really this is about through traffic. We've heard that many times from VDOT's facilitator, from VDOT, this is about through traffic. Not about you guys, not about 90% of us, because 90% of the traffic on that road, 85%, I've heard different numbers, but 90% is the one I see in these studies here, is local. So, just think about this, step back a little bit, okay? So tractor trailer's coming along here, he's in the left lanes because he's a little slow. When he hits the traffic light, it takes a little while to get wound up. So is he going to stay in the left lanes when he gets up to here, or is he going to choose the through lanes and not have to stop? What would you do if you were driving a tractor trailer? Yeah, you're going to pick the through lanes. You don't have to decelerate, reset, yep. So what's he doing in order to do that when he's coming up to the GSI? He's merging lanes. He's coming across to the centre so he can get through the through traffic. He doesn't have to go up that incline and then come down the other side or stop at the traffic light. Common sense says a tractor trailer operator is going to want to be in those through lanes. Common sense says he's usually going to be in the left lanes. Common sense says he's going to have to merge lanes. You tell me that this is about safety?
No way.
This is a beautiful illustration from VDOT, very pretty. This is probably more exactly what it's going to look like. It's going to be 25 foot down. Local traffic will be up here. Some local traffic will be in here. The tractor trailers are going to be in the middle here. And they've all got to get across to that lane. So what it look like on our main street? Well, there's our main street now. Not today. It's got a little bit of green on it. But that's what it'll look like. That's essentially the same perspective. Now, Maggie, you came from Northern Virginia. You're probably used to that, so it probably doesn't... Oh, it looks like Route 7, yeah. So let me state the Smart 29 position, and I think it's really important. I heard a word, NIMBYs. Anybody heard that word, NIMBYs? Yeah. Now, I didn't know what it meant. This is 3 or 4 months ago. NIMBY, what's that mean? I didn't want to sound stupid, so I had to look it up on Google, which is what you do, you know. Anyway, I found it's not in my backyard. Well, guess what? Smart 29 is not about that. It's not about not in my backyard. It's not about don't do this to me. We don't want construction. We don't want progress. We love the Bergmark Assembly extension. We think that's going to be awesome. We think Hillsdale Drive is the curve. Synchronisation of traffic lights should have happened years ago. Come on. And widening high grounds, Love Road, that scares me every day when I come up to that intersection. It scares me because traffic backs up at peak hour, and that's a horror. You talk about a safety issue at Ryan. No, there's a safety issue there. That is heaven sent. All we're saying, I'm sorry?
The best buy ramp.
Oh, the best buy ramp, yes. And the best buy ramp, I'm sorry, we're so for that. And I shouldn't have left it off there. I probably thought it was just a given. So, we're saying let's pause this grade separated intersection. Let's conduct a small area plan, as is in the Albemarle County Comp Plan. Let's do the small area study. And that's what Ken's calling for on the 4th. On February 4th, Ken needs you at the Board of Supervisors meeting demanding that the county does their job. The Board of Supervisors do their job and do the small area study. Let me jump back here for a second. I feel for the Board of Supervisors. No, I really do. I do. Because, and I'll tell you why. They're in a really precarious predicament. They've got this money that they can spend in the community. They know this is good stuff. All these things that we agree with, that you agree with, they know this is good stuff. But you know what Peter said? You don't get it unless you take the GSI. We're going to take everything away from you unless you take the whole box and dice. You swallow the poison pill, or you lose a lot. Why? Again.
It's our money.
No, engineer. I don't know what the answer is. I haven't told us yet. I haven't heard that. I haven't heard a good reason why the GSI has to be swallowed at the same time. I know it's coming from somewhere else, and it sure as heck ain't coming from Charlottesville. So, VDOT threw out a challenge to us in one of these meetings. They said, okay, you're so smart. You got all the answers. We've been studying this a long time. What's your answer? Mr. Shukat said that in a meeting directly to me. He wasn't nasty about it. It was a real genuine question. So you've got an answer. Give it to us. I'll look at it. We'll study it. We'll give it a due hearing. So we said, all right, let's do that. Let's go out and find somebody that can give us a great answer. Let's go out and find somebody that cares about Charlottesville community, that understands the vitality and necessity of the economy, of people getting access to places they like to visit. Let's go out and find the best person that we can find. We found a gentleman by the name of Ian Lockwood. Ian is the real deal. Everybody that's met him and sat with him, I think, is incredibly impressed with this man, but his resume speaks for itself. He's been doing this for 20 years. He started out in West Palm Beach as essentially a traffic planner, and he moved up through the ranks very quickly, and he turned West Palm Beach around from the crack capital of the USA, which it was at that point, to being a vibrant urban community, a place that people wanted to live, work and play. And from there, Ian went on and has done that in many, many communities nationally. So we asked Ian, who works for the Tool Design Group, to come to Charlottesville and look at this. Now, I'd already had multiple conversations with Ian over the phone, and he said to me, Grant, you might not like what you're going to hear. I'm like, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, it might be that the GSI is the right answer. I'm like, you really think so? And he said, I don't think that, but you've got to know that I'm coming in to this blind. I can see it on Google, and that tells me a lot, but when I come into your community, you know, maybe it's the right answer. So we took a risk, we rolled the dice and said, come on in. And we spent a few days with Ian up until Wednesday, and he submitted his enhanced network concept for consideration. And here's the challenge I'm throwing out to Mr. Shukat. Mr. Lane, Governor McAuliffe, but it's got to start here with the Board of Supervisors and the MPO, is give this consideration. Now, my poor friends, family, workmates, you know, I've hit them with this plan and they've looked at it and gone, oh my goodness, you know. So I've taken 133 slides, I apologise in advance, 133 slides and dropped them down to about 20. And I'm not going to try and explain what Ian explained to us and what he coached us on and what he told us about when he came here, but he looked at the bones of Charlottesville's transit plan and said there's a better way to do this than a GSI. And here's the answers he gave. First of all, he said, please let the audience know when you talk to them that I'm not supporting a highway bypass here. In fact, I don't think a bypass is necessary. Okay, that's his stance. Tool Design Group, they want to complement the Solutions 29 project, so they don't want to be in detriment to that. And any estimates are intended only to illustrate what might happen with the network capacity. And the last one was that the principles that he's using here is used throughout the nation for the last 20 years very successfully, and I'll give you a couple of examples of that. He used four principles, and I'm not going to belabor these, but I'll quickly go through them. He talked about confluences. I didn't know what that was. Well, I know what a confluence is, but I didn't know what it meant in traffic speak, so I'll explain that to you in a second. He said, you've got to use existing street capacity. You don't have to drive new roads through the wilderness, you know, to make this happen. You've got to use existing street capacity. You need to relieve Route 29, reduce queuing and delays, any queuing and delays people are experiencing. We've got to get that down. So, you know, he's on our side. And we've got to support the local community's access needs and motorists drive through. So he's not discounting that 10 or 15% of the traffic wants to get through Charlottesville. So he used four principles. And the first principle was recognise what an arterial is. Okay, what's an arterial? Well, right now, 29 is a pretty significant arterial to us. A lot of our economic strength comes from that area. Our jobs, our services, access comes off 29. I don't know many people that don't touch 29. Is there anybody that doesn't touch 29 at least a few times a week here? No? This gentleman's taking photos, so he wasn't putting his hand up. Anybody not local, I just need to ask that question just quickly. Anybody not from this area, just please raise your hand. Oh, well, for Charlottesville, Altamont County, you know, this doesn't affect. So 2, 3. So less than 10%. So we haven't got a good representation for the drive-through, but pretty close, okay? So look at arterials. The post-World War II concept, as Ian explained it, and again, I apologise for this sort of traffic lesson that we took the other day, but I'll shorten it really quickly, was all about mobility. An arterial is all about mobility. But in actual fact, an arterial is about access and mobility. Okay? Because even an arterial like 29, you need access to places. You want to get off 29. Most of us, when we get on 29, want to get off 29. Anybody who doesn't want to get off 29 is going through to Danville or Lynchburg. Yeah? So you want to get on and off, and access is important. This is going back to the 40s when they still had trams on Broad Street. And this building here, I guess this one with Sears on it, yeah it is that building there. And what they did was they did limited access treatment, which is code. It's a traffic planning code for we're going to take your access away. And that's what's been described as what's happening at the GSI. We're going to do limited access treatment. Principle two, confluences, avoid and fix confluences. This is a really important bit. A confluence is this, it's where you've got sort of something that gets stuck. It's sort of like getting something stuck in your throat, I guess. And Ian was telling me about this little town that he actually did some work with. And this town had four parallel roads, four big parallel roads with four lanes on them each, okay? And he came in and they said, hey, we need you to adjudicate because we're not sure whether we should widen this road or this road. We know we need to widen one of them to about six lanes because we can't get all the traffic through. It's really getting congested, you know, around this intersection. And Ian said, well, really? So what's here at this intersection? Well, there's a grocery store here, and it's got a lot of parking, and there's a few old shops here. And he said, what if we did... he said, you know, obviously your problem's here because you've really got eight lanes of traffic, not 12 lanes of traffic. So it makes sense. Everybody gets that. There's a traffic light here. So when it's on red, these guys can't go, these guys can. So you've always got eight lanes. They thought they had 12 lanes. And they thought they needed 14 or 16 lanes. So Ian kind of said, well, why don't we just take the intersection out? The air left the room, apparently. I wasn't there. But he said half an hour later, after a little bit of bickering and, you know, what do you think of that? Just paying this consultant all this money to tell us something that's pretty obvious. They made those changes. In fact, they've now cut it down to 10 lanes. They've actually put some parking back on these two streets. Pretty simple solution. And that's what Ian's all about, a simple solution. But you sort of got to look at it from the sky. You've got to look at it from above. And that's what he's trying to do, look at it from 40,000 feet. So confluences come in lots of different shapes and forms. And these are a few different ones. And I recognise this one when he drew it. Anybody else recognise this? Hydraulic road. Yeah, this is 29, hydraulic road. I can't. It's up there, I'm sorry. But you'll see in a second, I'll bring it up a little higher in one of the next slides. So you really got to sort of solve that problem, and you do it by trying to break down the confluence. And principle number three, use parallel networks. So essentially, when you've got an intersection like Rio, or like Hydraulic Road, which as Maggie said is probably the bigger problem, if you can build a network around it that actually functions, you see there's no network around this, so you can't avoid it. If my kids were at the Timberwood, you know, doing their puzzle, you know, they wouldn't be able to get out of there bar one way. So build a network. So how does this affect you? Well, a network gives you more options, gives you easier ways to get from A to B. Rather than having to drive, in Maggie's case, now, if the GSI happened, up to the top of Rio Road and do a U-turn and come back into Albemarle Square, or turn left and then drive all through Albemarle Square, Maggie has an option, but that option's being taken away. But he's talking about magnifying the number of options that we have, make it easier for you. And the last one is use your network effectively. And that's about intersections, and I'm not going to get into that because I was confused initially, but trust me, what he says makes sense, and it's really pretty simple. But let's just move forward and see what Ian had to say. So here's a couple of case studies. This is one he did in Flemington. I had a gentleman the other day who was actually said, I've driven through that round about 300 or 400 times. He said, I know exactly what you're talking about. And it's called a level of service effort. So it's a failing intersection, sort of like what Rio has been described as. Okay, failing intersection, level of service F, that's bad. F, like a grade on your exam paper, your kid's exam paper, is not good. Okay. So they said, let's build this $150 million grade separated solution. So we'll bypass stuff, we'll go over the top, we'll go under. Fantastic. Okay, fantastic. Except all the businesses around this area would have died, and so the businesses started to get up in arms, the Chamber of Commerce got involved. And before you know it, something like Smart 29 evolved, and the local politicians actually listened to them. And they said, let's do a small area study. And let's see if we can find somebody that can actually help us with this. And they went out and found Ian Lockwood. But I should explain before I go on, their solution made a level of service C. So they're saying this makes it better. Yeah, it's not good for the businesses, but, you know, that's not our problem. Sort of like Mr. Shuketa said to me on numerous occasions, that's not my problem. So his job is to get people through, get cars through. Okay, I understand that. That's his job. That's his mandate. I'm not criticising because that's what he's been told to do. It's not about business. Okay. So level of service C with this $150 million investment. And a Mr. Ian Lockwood with his network. Looks very pretty there, doesn't it? And level of service B was what New Jersey Department of Transport determined this would produce for $50 million. For a third of the price, increasing network, not building massive grade separated interchanges, produced a better result than spending $150 million and turned it into a vibrant urban community. Talking about here, we're not talking about no GSI, we're not talking about let's do a bypass. What we're talking about is let's do what's right for you, for your family, for your kids, for my kids when they start driving. Let's make something that is a legacy. So here's another case study, just quickly. This is called a super block. Ian said, we've got lots of super blocks here. I never knew that. If it was made of chocolate, I'd want to know about it. But And a super block is essentially a pretty big block that doesn't have any way to get through it, really, without having to drive through a shopping centre or something. And he said, you've got two major arterials coming through in here, and you've got a confluence, one of these sticky things, sort of like Rio and Hydraulic. And so Ian said, what we need to do is build a network. And the people at Winter Park said, okay, we'll give that a try, and they did, and that was what it was before, and that's what it is today. But really, you've got to get down on the ground to understand what the impact of this is. And that's what it looks like when you go into that area today. People walk, they push strollers, they ride bikes. And I don't want to sound all, you know, airy-fairy out there. But, and I'm going to say something that's going to scare a lot of people here. I'd love it if we could cut 29 down to 3 lanes instead of 4. And we could create pedestrian crossings and do all sorts of neat things. Now, I know I've got feet on everybody else shivering in their pants. Shoes, sorry. But I'd love to see emphasis injects some urban vitality into this area, and Ian is a master at doing that. So he x-rayed our bones. That means he got on Google Earth Pro and, you know, looked at the imagery of the roads as they stand, and he said, look, that's it, pretty much simple terms. That's sort of your north-south stuff, your purple stuff, and your east-west stuff is your green stuff, and that's sort of what it looks like, and you've got a problem.
Yeah.
He saw that problem before he came down here because he saw it on the map. He said, you're going to have a problem with hydraulic and Rio. I'm like, yeah, well, we're talking about Rio, but the city don't want to talk about hydraulics, so that's off the table for now. But yeah, hydraulic and Rio, they're our big intersections. And he said, so what's planned? And I said, well, the Solutions 29 program has Hillsdale Drive going through and extending Berkmar. And he's like, that's great. That's terrific news. That's good stuff. They just don't go far enough. I'm like, what do you mean? And he said, well, if we just stop here, some people are going to go left. So they're still going to go through Rio, so it doesn't go around the confluence. I'm like, yeah, I guess. And he said, and people up here, maybe turning onto Hillsdale is not going to be the easiest route. They're still going to go through hydraulic. I'm like, maybe, you know. And he said, Berkmar Extended doesn't impact either of these. It's a good thing, but it doesn't help. It's not going to help your community. It's not going to help people's commute. It's not going to help them get closer to where they want to get there more easily. He said, you've still got two confluences, and that's the problem. So, okay, so what do we do about it? And he said, just add a little bit of network. I'm like, is this new roads or what is this? And he said, no. It's using existing street capacity. Now you're going to have to join a few things up. And you're going to have to cut a little bit off the back of Fashion Square Mall parking and Albemarle Square parking. And I don't know, is Jimmy here tonight? Jimmy and Michael, yep. And Jimmy and Michael, they're co-owners of Albemarle Square. They said, look, that's great. If this is what is going to help the community get access, if this is going to stop us from removing one of only two access points to Albemarle Square, we're in. We will do whatever we can do to help that. And so Ian then went into a long explanation. I'm going to go a very short explanation. I apologise again. But he said, what happens is you've got traffic queuing and it's caused by volume and capacity. I'm like, okay, this sounds like a physics lesson to me. And he said, it's pretty simple stuff. But essentially, if this intersection's failing, as VDOT suggests, he says, I don't think it is. But let's say it is. Let's just draw a line and say it's at 90% capacity. Okay? It's pretty bad. He said, your queue lengths are going to be pretty high. Now, VDOT says that PM traffic, 156 seconds. I typically don't have to stop there, even at peak hour, for that long, but that's their estimation, so let's go with it. The problem is the two confluences, because 100% of your traffic's on 29, they don't have a choice. He said, Hillsdale's going to help, it's going to give you 10% of your traffic, but maybe half of them go this way, half go the other way. You've still got a confluence here, you've still got a confluence here, but it's going to improve things. So Hillsdale Drive will help our commute on 29. So we're already on a downward trajectory on 29. Now we're going to take it down a little bit further. We still need a GSI. And Ian's like, well, probably not, but you know, you need to study. You need to see what happens when you do this first. I'm like, they won't do it. VDOT won't do this first. They want to tie all this together because they know they're going to lose the GSI if they don't do it all together, because we're not going to need it. So with Ian's plan, with two parallel roads to 29, essentially, and making minor changes, I mean, I said order of magnitude, Ian. Like the GSI is 85 or 84 million, 84.5 or whatever. That's, by the way, two elementary schools you could build with that money if you had that $84 million. The new firehouse we've got renovated on Berkmar cost $8 million, and it's amazing. $8 million, you can get 10 of those renovations on your firehouses for that money. Now, we can't have that money to spend on those. I know Ian's going to wish, and so is Ken, but that's the order of magnitude we're talking about here. But doing this, Ian said, you know, look, some of this intersection work we're talking about is pretty minor, you know, $1 million, $1.5 million maybe. He said it couldn't exceed $3 million. You know, that'd be impossible unless you've got, you know, huge right-of-way issues. He said, really a fraction of what you're talking about for the GSI. But what it's going to do, again, is reduce your queue length. So you get an even easier drive bank. Now, you know Northern Virginia traffic, so this probably doesn't feel like a hard drive, but it's going to get easier. Let's jump back just quickly to there. This is with or without the GSI, because you're really not taking any traffic off 29. So this is the Solutions 29. This is with Ian's connections. And guess what? The county's already talked about some of this stuff. They've already got some of this stuff in the Places 29 plan. Maybe there's some nuances to the intersection, and maybe there's some refinements, but the county's talked about this stuff. But again, understand that the county is over a barrel here. You take it all, or you take nothing. Now, Mr. Shuket's on record for saying that. It's on public record, so I'm not making stuff up again. So I contest that we need to dig our heels in. I'm going to jump back here just for a second. This town that Mr. Lockwood talked about, whoops, don't go too far. No. This town, okay, they had to dig their heels in because the Department of Transport was going to take away the money they were going to get for the extra lanes. They were going to lose the money. Department of Transport said that. You're going to lose the money. You're going to lose the money. Sorry. And the people that were representing their community, the county members, the supervisors up there, I don't know exactly what they're called technically, if they didn't use that phrase, what they did was they said, no, we'd rather get no money than see this happen to our community. Go away. I don't want to see this opportunity to enhance our driving experience. I don't want to see the opportunity to pull the kids off 29. The kids come out of Ashwood Boulevard here, okay, and they could cross 29 to Berkmar, and they could drive across Berkmar and get up to Albemarle High School without ever having to go on 29. And guess what? The supervisors are not in favour of that, not in favour of the Ashwood Boulevard. Is that correct, Ken, or not? Am I wrong? Because I was told that Mr. Shuket thinks that's a good idea, the Ashwood Connector. Don't want to put you on the spot. It's up in the air. Okay. So I'm saying that this sort of stuff is the sort of thing we should be spending our money on. This is the sort of stuff that we need to be devoting our money on. Make it easier for our kids to get around safely. Get people off 29. If the trucks want to be or have to be on 29, because there's no bypass, and that's fine with me, they have to be on 29. I don't want to be on there with them. So if you go down to a micro level, these intersections, Ian's detail, all these intersections, how we would treat them, and some of these nuances are a little bit different to the Places 29 plan, but guess what? A lot of it aligns with the Places 29 plan. So it's not like he's off in limbo. There's a few things he's done, like this Woodburn road. I drive down Woodburn to go to the reservoir to paddle my kayak with my kids and my family, and I know it, I'm like, Woodburn? And then when you look at a map and you look at what he's talking about and dropping a roundabout here, on, you know, and I'm just giving you a real sort of glimpse of what he's talking about and how this guy thinks, you're not really adding a road. All you're doing is adding connection and a roundabout. And then suddenly those kids that are coming out of Ashwood, getting onto Berkmar, are now going on Woodburn. They're not even getting on Berkmar Raya and heading across to Albemarle County, Albemarle High School. Man, that's music to my ears because my kids are going to be going to Albemarle County. Albemarle High School. So jumping to Ian's recommendations, he said, look, consider all elements when you do this. You can't take the business community out of this. You can't take the local travel out of this. 90% of your travel is local. They should be the first and foremost in whatever you do. Yeah. I agree with that. Pause the Rio Road GSI long enough to allow the small area study that Ken's championing on February 4th at the Board of Supervisors meeting, and he needs your support there. Champion that, make that happen, and this GSI really comes into focus and question. And begin implementing the Solutions 29 parallel road projects. And at this point I stopped him and said, Ian, this is great, but VDOT said, no way. It's all or nothing. It's all or nothing. And I said, well, what do you think we should do? And he said, stand your ground. You better lose the money. You get an aberration like a GSI plonked on your main street when it's likely not needed. And then went to the enhanced network. And this is the part I didn't like hearing. But he said, and then you know what? Reconsider whether a GSI is necessary once you've got all these options for people. and I think you'll find that it will be completely unnecessary. This is a cartoon Andrew. He's quite a talented guy, and I'll read it for those folks down the back. And it's got this sort of beautiful boulevard, which is sort of my vision for 29 down the stream, by the way. And it's got this great separated interchange here, this highway, and it's 25 foot up, and sort of like we're looking at here. And this is the thing, this is this sort of machine. And what you do, you put the county's vision, public input, and the old road go on one end, and people and business-friendly places come out the other. This is his black box. And it's not rocket science, it's not a black box, it's real simple. It's really looking at what the community needs, looking at what 90% of commuters on Route 29 need every day, not what 10% of through trucks need. It's looking at what's going to happen when they have to merge and what sort of damage is that going to cause. It's looking at how can we get people around better? Can we put in better sidewalks? Can we put in bike lanes? Can we make Route 29 something you'd actually like to run on? I know my wife runs on Route 29 and she almost chokes from all the fumes. You start to spread the load. So conclusion, the Solutions 29 projects should provide solutions for our town. They should provide solutions for you and solutions for your family. Stand up and be counted. We need you at the Board of Supervisors on the 4th. We need you to contact the Governor. We need you to contact your supervisor. Ken Boyd gets this. You don't have to hound him. You might want to tell him, good job. But the other 5 supervisors are standing united because they don't want to lose this money for the county, and I get that. But it's not the right reason to build this monstrosity in the middle of our town.
From the Places 29, one of the references in that. It says, this master plan recognizes the need for intersection improvements at US 29 and Rio Road prolong the useful life of the current at-grade intersection. That's what our plan calls for. This is a statement talking about do a small area plan. And to get to those points, it says this. Improvements should provide adequate levels of service on the roads and access to adjacent properties. Have we been talking about that? Access to our adjacent properties? It says improvements to this road network should be phased in a manner that prolongs the life of the existing at-grade intersection. Now this is right out of our plan for Albemarle County, which is approved by the Board of Supervisors. And the last one, it says all options for intersection improvements will be considered during preparation of a small area plan. This is the step that VDOT wants to skip. They don't want to do a small area plan, and I think that the reason that is, my own personal opinion, is because it would never pass a small area plan if we did it. What I'm going to ask the supervisors next week or next Wednesday at our meeting, and we have public input that's available starting at 7 p.m., is to go back and do this small area plan, to put this plan on hold until such time as we can do this and we can bring in somebody like Ian Lockwood or some experts that will help us come up with a better plan that does not include grade separated interchange. Now one thing that's important we need to realize is that every single one of these projects is a separate line item on the Commonwealth Transportation Board agenda. So this whole idea or scare tactic that if we don't take all of the package, we're going to lose all of it, it's not really the truth, because the Commonwealth Transportation Board is the people who have to approve the contracts for this, and these are separate items on that list. So we can very well get the grade separated interchange pass or paused, as Grant said, And we need to do that. We absolutely need to do that because we need to see, is this the right plan for us? Because after it's built, after the shovel's in the ground, it's too late. We can't change it. We can't reverse it. It'll be there. And I think that this is just the first step in many more grade separated interchanges up and down 29 until they have destroyed the entrance corridor to our community. Something that I'm very proud of having protected for a long time. Questions that you might have, and yes, Meg.
I have one, and it kind of made my sense of mind. Why does DDOT have full power and control over the situation, or who has power over DDOT? I got a response back from the governor of the letter I sent, and he told me that this decision is completely independent of him, that he has no authority over this decision. So who does? And the reason why I asked him is when they expanded this area that they're redoing now, we lived through that, I know for a fact that DDOT did not recommend that lane at Forest Lake South. They said it would be dangerous. We have two accidents a week, maybe, right there between Polo Grounds Road and Forest Lake South. But somehow that light got put in against VDOT, against the police department. I know the person who was ahead of the highway department at that time, so I know for a fact. How did that happen? Who tells VDOT what they can and cannot do?
Well, the question is really, what power do we have as local citizens over VDOT? And yes, there is some mention of the Ashwood Boulevard traffic light and why that was put in at first. I understand that story too. I've heard the same thing. It was long before I was on the Board of Supervisors, but I had heard that there was, VDOT was recommending against putting that in. I think that's why we are so much in favor of widening 29, because we'll fix that line of sight when we do that.
Who has power over VDOT? In the state, who has power over them?
The governor. The legislation can also appropriate money. And Grant, you want to add something?
I think that's a really good question, and I avoided this a little bit because I get into trouble for saying too much. VDOT has its marching orders, and the gentleman that gives them their marching orders right now is really Mr. Chouquette. He's the facilitator. Mr. Chouquette, former Commissioner of Transport, a very smart man, very well-spoken, very articulate, and he's been given his orders by Mr. Lane, Mr. Aubrey Lane. Now, Mr. Lane has been given his orders by the governor. So as much as the governor says that this is not really about him, if you want to sort of follow the money trail, you might see where it's coming from, and you'll see that really the governor's pushing the buttons on this. And as far as he's concerned, he wants to see some action in Charlottesville. And if whether it's good action or not, Philip Chouquette's on record for saying, hey, let's just do something, even if it's not perfect. Well, I'm like, this is far less than perfect. So I'm sorry, I'm going on record for saying that.
Yes. Speak up if you would, so we can hear you.
How will this plan affect the entrance?
All right, the question is, how will this plan influence the entrances to Woodbrook and Carsburg? It's going to have a huge amount of... You'll go ahead.
I'm just going to use this plan just for the moment, just to give you a sort of thought about this. Here's Woodbrook here, okay? So you take away the Albemarle Square light, and suddenly everybody that's going north, that normally would turn right into Albemarle Square, now has to go on the right side of the road or on the wrong side of the road. So we'd have to now do a U-turn at Woodbrook, okay? And that's going to be a problem. And if you look at the VDOT numbers, and I've actually got the charts and I can show them to you, if you look at the Woodbrook numbers, the numbers are going to go up. And they're going to go up because there's going to be more U-turns and more left turns. And what ultimately will happen is I'll take the left turns away. Because this problem, it's sort of like, has anybody had their spine fused? Sorry. And what happens above and below where it gets fused? It starts to become dysfunctional because the pressure's put on those vertebrae. You know, I've had my back fused, so I know this. And that's what's going to happen. So Woodbrook is going to implode and so shop as well, which is one of our major concerns. And so these entrances are going to be impacted, sadly, and I'm sorry.
And in follow-up to that question, I also want to say that let's just imagine for a minute that what we're going to do is we're going to shoot these big semi-trucks who are traveling through town through that underpass. They're going to go through what's what I call a trough that's going to go through there. And they're going to be picking up speed because that's what they want to do. They want to get moved along as fast as they can. What happens when they hit Woodbrook Light and it's red? Or it's orange? This is how we lost a young life at Ashwood Boulevard years ago. I don't want to see that particular dangerous situation established again. You know, one of the things that's being talked about is the fact that if we do lose tax revenue, and there's anywhere numbers from 20 to 40% that we could possibly lose in business tax revenue because of reduced sales in that area, how are we going to make that up? Now, there's been some discussion on the board about, well, we could go to our Economic Development Authority and get some loans to these people. I don't know whether they need the loans or not, but that's an offer we could do to try and help them get through this time. Now, whether or not they want to take on any more debt, I'm not sure, but that's just one of the things that's being thrown around as a possibility. The only real way that I can see, given the enabling authority that we have here locally, is that we can help with signage, possibly. We're just going to have to take the hit of those taxes. Now, we've got a shortfall in our taxes, as you know. You've seen some of the preliminary numbers. I haven't seen the final budget yet. But anywhere we saw $3 million more that the school system's going to need than what we had in the budget for them. Where's this money going to come from? It's going to come from your pockets. This is where, because your real estate taxes are going to go up. We're going to have to make up the difference of what we lose in business taxes. And it's not just business taxes, it's property taxes and real estate. They pay the same taxes. So the sales taxes, meals taxes, there's all sorts of things that are going to be impacted by this. Maria.
All I know is if there's really a chance of stopping this, because I'm afraid of my job. For every business owner we talk about, there's dozens of employees like myself that are going to be affected by this, and we either have to take a pay cut or have to lose our job. And I want to know, can we stop this before we keep our jobs, or all of us hundreds of employees, not just business owners, but us employees, we're going to be able to keep our jobs?
Well, that, I think, there is one way that the local authorities can stop this, and this is through our MPO. If we can get enough votes at the MPO meeting to say, readjust this schedule and do the grade separate interchange as the last part of the project. And you're exactly right. I think about, you know, my office is up here at 29 Ohio Road, and I go to the Hardee's there, and I go to the Wendy's along there. What do you think is going to happen to those businesses? And those are some of those vulnerable citizens we have. I mean, I don't think those are high-paying jobs, but yet I see the same people in there all the time. So it's not like these people are not dependent on their jobs. And do you think they're going to survive this on the other side of a 25 or 26 foot wall?
Yeah.
Okay.
What is MPO? Where do they get their authority, and how do we reach them?
The MPO is a Metropolitan Planning Organization. It deals with transportation issues on a regional basis. There's two city councilors. There's two board of supervisor members. And there is one VDOT representative, and that's the entire voting block of that group. My plan is to put a motion forward for the Board of Supervisors to direct our MPO representatives to put the pause button on this grade separated interchange. And that's why this meeting on February the 4th is so important.
Richard. You have those two supervisors on the MPO.
Who is on the MPO in particular, on the city, from the county? Who were they indebted to?
Brad Sheffield and Ann Malik are the two representatives from the county.
Oh, great. The city?
And the city is, I think, Ann, it's Mayor Hooja and Kristen Sakos. Oh, wait a minute.
Our question should be of the VDOT. Our question should be of our supervisors. They're the people representing us.
Yeah!
We need to work on these supervisors either today, tomorrow, or at election time.
Thank you. Again, we have the petitions up here to sign. We have a tear-off card on our door hangers that you can send a letter to supervisors and to the governor. And we've also got a sign-up sheet, which we'd like you to come out on February the 4th, next Wednesday, and tell your supervisors what you feel. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, this is a request to put it up on the web page. Can we do that?
Absolutely, we can. We'll set to find a format that's easy for you to get into. We'll probably put it up as a PDF that you can open if you're okay with that. We've got nothing to hide here. We've got copies here for the press tonight of that. We're happy because we want to give the Board of Supervisors Ian's recommendations. It's a 133-page document, so we'll probably put up on the web the shorter version you see here. But understand that this is a series of suggestions. The most important thing here is, and that the gentleman that asked the question, how do we stop this thing? The most important thing is we press the pause button if we can do that. That's what we really need to do. At this stage, I'm not sure that that's going to happen any other way. The contract is about to be awarded in about a week's time. And I'm sure that everybody who is pro this is really happy that our timeline's this short. But, you know, probably litigation is going to be the way we're going to end up having to stall it. And that just really isn't how we want to come about this. We'd really like to come about this in a very positive way. Phil?
All finger pointing aside, if the governor decided tomorrow that he wanted to kill the GSI at 29 and Rio Road, does he have the power to do that?
Yes, he certainly would. Yeah. If he were to decide that's what he wanted. Yes?
There's an article in the paper 7 weeks back about money that was set aside for the bypass. Wait, 97 million, was that money that is out there for the county to also use?
No, actually, that money is what is being used for the grade separated interchange and the other projects, the solutions projects. Yeah, it was shifted from one project to another. Yes?
Yeah, I can. Something that wasn't mentioned was the issue of life safety. Seminole Trail Fire Station is right at that intersection, and they're a major user of that. The GSI intersection will drastically limit the access into that area by the rescue services. There's also a medic unit 24/7 that's based in that area right now, too. The network approach would be a lot better from an access to the overall area for people's safety.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. And for those of you who didn't hear it, his concern is that it's going to drastically affect the medical services, the ambulance, and fire rescue that is currently coming out of the Seminole Trail area.
That's the busiest station in the county.
It is the busiest station in town. That's exactly right. Okay.
Finally, you and I agree on something. I would like to know how we might go about in soliciting support of other taxpayers out of our area and money that is being wasted on such a ridiculous project. I think that would help put additional pressure on the governor. Why are you wasting our money on something that's just ridiculous?
Well, for those of you who didn't hear, that it was a statement as much as a question, is why don't we enlist the help of some of our neighboring communities, because they certainly have got transportation needs and we're wasting money on this great separated interchange. Thank you for agreeing with me, Simon. Obviously, we have been in touch with some of the legislators. The Smart 29 group has been talking to them. We will continue that effort before, but we try to get as much attention from them as we can. Richard, you had
Ken, you mentioned the people on the MPO, who seems to be your best chance to stop this. Only two of them are up for re-election in the near term. What can we do to influence McCulloch to stop this? Because there's no other way that I can see.
Well, I would say, you know, the efforts that are going on is certainly we've got our petition. We need as many signatures on that petition as we can get on it. If you haven't signed it, you can do it either here tonight or you can do it online at smart29.org, either one. Certainly, that's going to be presented to the Commonwealth Transportation Board. when they hold their meeting, they've still got the final approval of the contract to do. And I think we're going to be there, and we're going to present this petition, and we're going to try and make our point that this is not a solution that our community is interested in, that the grades separated interchange. Yes, sir.
Can we see the video that VDOT has prepared of entering the tunnel, driving all the way through it, what it looks like as you exit it? Do you have that, Grant? It lasts only 10 or 15 seconds.
Yeah, if you go out to the Solutions 29 package, you can do that. We didn't really come prepared to show that tonight, Jeff. Yes?
Yeah, I'd like to make a challenge for everybody who's so concerned about this situation. Each and every one of us has a right to go to the board supervisor meeting next Wednesday and share our thoughts.
The other thing I think is really important is to reach people that are not in this room that live in other parts of the community that may not think this affects them, but I think they may not understand what the problem is. And it's so easy to really sign the petition online if you just make sure you pass the word to your friends that live elsewhere, not just in this local area, but we obviously have to.
That's a good point. That's a way to get other communities involved in this situation. Anybody can go online and sign the petition. This is a VDOT's rendition of the grade separated interchange. That's what we're going to have.
Ever since the Jamestown Commons rolled the first hog heads of tobacco and the footprints from Dewey to Wharf.
So I'm playing this on purpose, and I apologize. I didn't mean for it to go, but if I could just run with this for 60 seconds, I want you to hear something very important. This is on media, VDOT's website, okay? Sorry.
It was clear that a more prosperous economy would only be possible with continued improvement of transportation. If Virginia's agricultural production and fortunes were to grow, roads and bridges had to be built. Colonial leaders thought then, and modern leaders know today, that strong transportation infrastructure provides the impetus for lively community growth and economic development. Virginia's highway infrastructure of today and tomorrow is the responsibility of the Virginia Department of Transportation. We're dedicated to enhancing the economy and improving the quality of life for Virginia's 8 million residents, while carefully watching every tax dollar spent.
I'm sorry, I'm going to stop there because it does go on, but that's the relevant soundbite. I want to play that for Mr. Chiquette when he tells us that the economic implications of a project like this don't matter.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Closer, and I sure hope that our MPO
people will reconsider this and also listen to us on the 4th of February.
One observation about that. You know, we had a contract that was issued to, we had awarded a contract, VDOT had awarded a contract to somebody to build the Western Bypass. And that was a package of services. It was not just the Western Bypass. That was the only one in that particular bid, but we also included in that Hillsdale Drive, the Burkmore Drive extended, at least putting a bridge up for that, the Best Buy ramp, widening 29. That project was killed, and it did not take away all the money for all those other projects because they were left in, and they swapped the bypass for one grade separated interchange. Now, we had a bypass, and the price tag on that by itself was $134 million in that contract that was awarded, and it would have bypassed 13 or 14 traffic lights. We would have got two grade separated interchanges, one at both ends. And instead of that, now what we're going to get is we're going to get, well, for $94 million, almost as much, we're going to get one grade separated interchange. We're going to eliminate three lights. And we're going to study another grade separated interchange for $10 million. I think we ought to study this grade separated interchange before we move forward.
To say and make public is that there's a lot of fear that the bypass is going to come back. A lot of the supervisors were elected on promises that they would get the bypass out of our mix, good or bad. I'm apolitical, so I'm not on either side of that. Ian tells me we don't necessarily need a bypass, that there's better solutions. I'm not even getting into that. All I know is right now that this is the poison pill that kills the bypass in the eyes of the anti-bypass movement. And that's really what we're suffering from here. You know, we've got to separate these things. This is not going to kill another bypass coming up in 20 years. Whether another bypass comes up or not, the money will be found if it's needed. But what I'm really saying here is that to trade out this poison pill to kill the bypass seems like an unfair thing to do. The Piedmont Environmental Council have gone on record for trying to stop our actions in hiring Mr. Lockwood and his firm, who actually Piedmont Environmental Council use and SELC use extensively, and they respect Mr. Lockwood's firm enormously, and they didn't want him coming down because he had so much credibility, and they see this grade separated intersection as a poison pill for the bypass. I'm like, can we just get over the bypass and move on? I have bypass fatigue and I've only been here 18 years. Don't make this about the bypass. And I'm saying that to the supervisors. This should not be about the bypass. This should not be about why the supervisors got elected. This should be about what's the best thing for the community. What's the best thing for our town?
That's exactly right. I agree 100% with James. This is not about switching out a grade separated interchange for a bypass. That's not what I'm advocating here. What I'm advocating is that we don't know enough about the impact of the parallel roads. We don't know enough about the impact of the grade separated interchange on our tax dollars in this community. And we need to put on the pause button and take a hard look at that. Do the small area study and see what the impacts of this are going to be. And, you know, involve VDOT in that, I think that would be great, but we need not to move forward. Yes, sir.
Just to keep the ball rolling, shouldn't everybody in the room maybe call the governor tomorrow?
I wish I had his number to give to you.
I just want to say, when I saw the Winter Park, Florida, I'm from Florida. I live there. I know what it used to look like. And the enhancements that they did to make it easy access to the businesses, the schools, to whatever you were doing, the parks, it works. I don't really want to, and I'm sure you don't either, want to see something that belongs in L.A., or in Dallas or Chicago. This is our town, so our community is beautiful, and people come here because it's beautiful, and they love the way it is. Why destroy what it is? Enhance the roads. Do what you can for our community. So
thank you very much. Yes.
This isn't a question, but maybe with our NGO people,
to add insult to injury, is there a way to get this money that we're talking about to the DSI that would also input the people from Louvain and Louisa Buckingham to take that money and do that, be studying the free bridge?
Well, that was actually a comment that was made earlier. There has been a group of us that have been meeting and talking about the Pantox area and dealing with the congestion on that road. And I might, I go through both those intersections every day to and from work, and I might suggest that it's probably worse on 250 and 20 than it is on Rio. I can get through Rio a lot quicker. Yes. I think that's a very viable thing for us to do, is to look at how we might improve that situation and really provide some good transportation efforts. Thank you so much for that comment. Yes, ma'am.
Well, I think it's just common sense. If you take a road that has like four or five lanes going through an intersection and cut it down to two lanes, wouldn't that make it awful, dangerous and have more accidents than what you have currently have now?
Well, I think common sense would tell you that that's probably a good statement that you made, but I don't think it fits the engineer's design.
I might understand that if this takes place, there will be no right turns off of Rio Road. How about being able to move it on the square?
No, it will be right turns off of Rio Road. What there won't be is any left turns off of the area where the interchange is. You're going to have to go off to the right on a ramp, go up and make a U-turn to come back to, if you want to get across the 29. You know, I don't know the answer to that question. It's kind of like, man, we were all trying to figure that out ourselves. Yes, sir.
Yes, if they took the video that they produced going through the grade separating and interchange and extended it north, they would just see two lanes going north, light after light after light after light. I have not seen that argument made that grade separating interchange makes absolutely no sense when you consider through traffic going north.
So when an argument, you have to state something very simply. What I've not heard stated simply is on this subject is we've got like 20 lights between the airport road and the bypass, and we're only taking care of two. How does that solve the problem? I think that's an important way to state the problem. You've got to state it simply. Two lights out of 20 doesn't solve the problem. I think that needs to be hammered home.
Thank you very much. I agree with you. Yes, sir.
I live on Rio Road. I work 29 more. I drive Rio Road 29 twice a day, every day. How am I supposed to get home? Tell me. Nobody will give me an answer. I called my supervisor and I got, it will only be a minor inconvenience for a day. I want to pertain to this. This directly affects my livelihood. My job is 29 more. My home, my traffic is on Rio Road. And nobody seems to want to address the people that live on Rio Road. What are you supposed to do? We're doing a chore.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes,
sir. If it's true that the supervisors are in a tough spot, maybe we can help them.
Amen.
They simply need to find enough nerve to call their bluff. To say, no, we're not going to buy this package. If they do that, believe me, it won't be long before Stress Revive comes back, Birthmark comes back, individually, but separated from this mess. It's a matter of getting enough nerve to call their bluff.
Examples of other communities that did just that, and it worked out for them. Any other quick comments? I'm sorry.
I think this is an amazing turnout, a lot more than I expected when I was driving up. I thought, that I didn't expect there wouldn't be any parking spots, that kind of thing. So I think everybody, it's impressive that there's really no apathy on this subject. I'm not trying to shine a bad light on anybody. Is there a good reason why our MPO supervisors are not here?
One of them is. Ms. Malik is here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Where's the other one? Where's Brad's the other one?
Yes, sir.
Good. Yeah, we're talking about the whole package and nothing. How many millions of dollars are we losing in revenue? How many years would it take to buy ourselves?
Well, that would take quite a few years for us to buy ourselves.
Here's one thing I say to my kids. I say, would you buy it with your own money? Do you want to buy it with your own money? Because they want this and they want that and want everything, okay? And I say, would you buy it with your own money? And the answer is, if the answer is no, I'm not going to buy it for them. We're not going to buy it for them. But if the answer is yes, that they would, they'd save up and buy that thing, then we might help out a little bit. And I tell you, it's a great litmus test. I'd love to ask the board, if you had $84 million to spend tomorrow, is this how you'd spend it? And that's not the choice in front of them, but I honestly don't believe one of them would spend $84 million this way if it was their money.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. It is our money, because the state of Virginia does not create any income at all. And all their income comes from us.
Amen.
Great. Great.
Yes. I had a question. I came here really with no preconceptions one way or another. I live on Northfield Road. In the plan that's being proposed, how much extra traffic would go by my house? How fast?
There would probably be a lot during construction. Now, I do know.
I've got the plan that was being proposed here. I understand during construction it's going to be ugly. The plan that would be proposed here, which would take 10% of Route 29 traffic, and expect that to go in front of my house. Is that right?
Well, there is a plan to put what's called a pork chop in front of Northfield Drive so that you can't continue on across from Hillsdale Drive. But if you want to see how well those things work, go up here to the shops at Stonefield and look at the pork chop up there and how many people just get around that.
I don't think you answered my question. The question was, what's the comparison of the amount of traffic that travels down Northfield Road now compared to if your substitute plan passed? What would be the amount of traffic that would travel down Northfield Road each day? That's what I'm trying to find out.
So I understand your question. And pardon my ignorance, where's Northfield on here?
Hillsdale, and it's Northfield.
If you're talking about Hillsdale, the plan currently is to put additional, because it goes through now, to put additional traffic on there. Would additional traffic in this plan end up in Hillsdale? Probably. It would come off hydraulic. Is it going to be 10% more? I don't know. And truly, they were very preliminary estimates that Ian did. But what Ian said, this needs to be studied. This needs to be studied. This is not something you just say, hey, let's do this. This is a better plan. He said, this is the bones of a better plan. And maybe what you're saying, that's going to put too much traffic in front of your house, so that needs to be studied. So I'm not evading the question, I'm just saying there's no answer for it, but that's what we're calling for. That's what Ken's calling for, is can we press the pause button long enough to study that and work out what the implications are? And maybe, what would happen at this intersection here shouldn't happen. Maybe the emphasis needs to still bring the traffic through to hydraulic.
Yeah, that's really what we're advocating for, is to do the small area study, which should have been done a long time ago. And according to our master plan, it was to be done before we did anything with a grade separated interchange. And we're proposing to do that. That's what I'm proposing to do. Yes, sir. I think that's a good plan. Yeah, we have a lot of people who work in Albemarle County or in the city of Charlottesville who live in Greene or Madison or Nelson or other communities. So, yeah, I think it would be worthwhile to reach out to some of those other boards of supervisors.
I think the city, we need to reach out to the city, because the city has signed off on this intersection, on the Rio intersection, yet they won't sign off on the hydraulic intersection. So I really feel like there's sort of a bit of a double standard there. You know, the MPO members from the city have signed off on the intersection to go at Rio, but they won't sign off on the intersection to go at Hydraulic. Yeah, I think we should be talking to the city as well.
Thank you. Good point. So that's the... Yeah, John.
My name is John Chavan. I'm a long-term resident of Albemarle County. I think the people concerned should really be all about locals living here. I can agree with Mr. Chandler because I have many friends that have businesses along 29. And for those who don't know, shop retail space is about $30 to $50 a square foot if you rent on 29. If these people lose their customers even for a month, a family business like Mr. Chandler would have shut down. And it's a great shame for our locals who have put their blood and sweat raising their children and grandchildren. And this way, somebody making decisions for our local community is a disaster. Secondly, Mr. Boyd pointed out on Penta, I live in Keswick on East Keswick Drive. If my kids want to eat bagels, if I have to go to Lowe's, I am the traffic. I fear the traffic. I've been telling the Board of Supervisors, if you know where the Comfort Inn Hotel is, on the left-hand side, all the way to the Shadville store, which is now renovated, we have many parcels, patches. We have floor fashions of Virginia, we have VDOT. I've even told them, we just heard that the school board needs $3 million. I don't have a printing press at home, but I would gladly print some money. I have given them common sense appeal. People that live on that area don't have to come and add traffic here. People can open businesses that are already existing in that area, and the county does not have to provide them with water and sewer. There are many businesses that can open in that area, which will generate money for the county and can reduce the shortfall for school, for police, for sheriff. So think about local economy. Think about Mr. Chandler. Think about the people that live here, want to raise our families here. Don't let people that don't live here make vital decisions for us.
One of the board members said of the businesses that are around this quadrant, around the Rio 29 quadrant, that they chose to be there. Okay, hold on. But this GSI has been in the plan for 20 plus years. These people chose to be there. And they should have had more forethought. I'm paraphrasing, okay? But that was the bottom line. And I really took a front of that. I don't have a business there. But I know a lot of small business owners do, and a lot of them, that's how their families exist. You know, people have slighted Mr. Wendell because he's got lots of money and, you know, he's a big business guy and that he's just complaining about losing a few meals. Bill's assured me he won't lose any meals if Albemarle Square closes down. Okay. He's worried about the community. The reason he's invested so much in this fight is he's worried about the community because he chose to live here. These businesses chose to be there because they believed that that was a great place to be, and the county let them open up business there. So to say that they probably made a poor choice in hindsight because they should have seen it on the plan back in 1991 is a disingenuous at the best.
It might be unfortunate for Mr. Wendell to close the ACAC, but there's a lot of jobs that would be lost as a count of that if we had.
Just a statement to say that the thing that concerns me most about all of this is the unwillingness to look at the study. How many things do we study? How many things do we go over again and again and again? And for a project that can have this kind of impact and this kind of dollar, to have our local representatives not insist on the study, to me is malfeasance. I think it's ridiculous. And I keep hearing about the children in this community. Let's remember that probably most of the folks who have businesses on that stretch are also raising children. They're not only creating money for taxes, which go into the school system, but they're buying food and clothes for the children that they're raising as well. So I think we have to look at this in terms of the impact you say on local community. Terry McAuliffe, I'm sorry, is disingenuous for him to wash his hands and say, I've got nothing to do with it. As far as I'm concerned, I count him on the phone and count him in email.
Thank you.
Personal example. My doctor is at the Rio Road intersection. My athletic club is there. I've actually contemplated changing homes.
There's a customer right there. That's what we're talking about. Yes.
The sequence right now, based on what the board has said, is the grade separated interchange first. Then the parallel roads will start at some point. Common sense tells you, you do the parallel roads first to give more access for the traffic on 29. It'll encourage more traffic to use the parallel roads. Where is common sense on the Board of Supervisors?
None.
It doesn't make sense.
You know, one of the problems here that I'm coming up against every day, because I work on this pretty much full time, is that common sense is not prevailing. I'm sorry. I wish it was, because if it was, that would come into question. Mr. Shuketa said, and it's on record again, that we need the GSI to ameliorate the impact of the parallel roads, which is both counterintuitive, it goes against common sense, and also goes against what Ian Lockwood would say, winner of the 2009 Traffic Engineers Award, the most prestigious award in the nation. This guy has revitalised community after community. The lady down here that spoke about Winter Park, it's not fiction, it's fact. Common sense, if it prevailed, would say you do the parallel roads first, which is what Ian's saying, and then you study the GSI. We actually had a traffic engineer do a statistical study on what the impact of the parallel roads would be, because Mr. Hsu kept saying that when the parallel roads happen, it's going to put more pressure on the GSI, which is why we need the GSI first. So the traffic engineer went, well, that doesn't make sense, and he went back and got all the data that he could to determine why that might come about, and he can't see anything that would drive that. And we've debated that internally and externally. Here's the thing you've got to know, and this will be maybe my last comment. Common sense is not prevailing here. The Board of Supervisors is united for the GSI. The only man that's standing apart is Ken. There's five Board of Supervisors members saying, build the GSI, build it now. I can't talk to them about innovation. I know that bypass is a part of it. I know that the package is a part of it. But at the end of the day, they're the people that can influence the NPO, that can ultimately influence the outcome. Unless the governor comes in and says no, and he's not going to, because Piedmont Environmental Council, a lot of the big donors for that were big donors for Mr. McAuliffe. It's all locked in. You're not going to change that, I'm sorry. You can try it, I hope you do, I hope you get on the phone. But you need to work on your board like you've got five board members saying, build that GSI, build it tomorrow, get it started, let all this noise go away. Only one man standing.
My sense is that they're trying to rush it through.
Absolutely.
Because they're scared there may be a change in the governorship.
Absolutely.
Within 4 years, and we'll go back to a bypass. The bypass, I was in favor of, it was voted out. But it makes sense to do things in the proper sequence. And to spend $84 million and create the havoc it's going to create on 29 North does not make sense. And I'm sorry, it's wrong. And we need to speak up and let them know.
All the way to that. Thank you.
I would like more for us to have a unified position for this train to run into two things. So in order to have a unified position, we probably need to know a little bit more facts about this alternative, even though it's being studied. And then the second part is, do you have any idea what the cost of this alternative would be versus the one that's running real fast? There's two pieces we need to clear up if I met that problem.
Can I tell you, firstly, with the alternate plan that was suggested, we did that on the behest of Mr. Shinkai, who said, come up with a better plan. So we did that. Do we think we need to do all this tomorrow? No, I'd like to see what happens with the Bill staff. I'd like to see what happens with Bergmar. We'd like the time to study what would potentially happen with GSI. This needs a lot of work. This is already, in large part, in the Places 29 plan. It needs some nuance in it. And you're right there, you know, that we don't know exactly what the ramifications of this might be. Some of these elements might not belong in the ultimate plan. So we're not saying we have all the answers here. What we're saying is there is a better alternative. And what Ian said was, look, you could just do one of these parts, just do the Woodburn thing, for example, and that would make a huge difference. So, you know, it might be something where he's got, I think, about nine different little pieces in there, and he said, look, two or three of these could make a significant difference. And ameliorate the need for GSI. The second question, in terms of the order of magnitude, his order of magnitude on the projects he's done has typically been about a third of what it would cost to solve it through what would be called conventional means. So up in New Jersey, it was a $150 million project. They're expecting that to come in around $50 million. And I'm trying to think of another project that he did. But anyway, the point Ian made is, look, I can give you more parts, because you're going to have to put it to bed. But the bottom line is it costs a hell of a lot less. That is the bottom line. But we might never need all these elements of this, but we'd love to get the details out there. We want to get them in the hands of the supervisors. But right now, this locomotive is running. And it's running hard to that bid being awarded next week.
Okay, so what I understand the timeline is supervisors meeting, MPO, those are our opportunities. What about the probability of Rob Bell to build? That's going to take a while for that thing to get approved, right?
45 days.
Yeah, 45 days. They're going to send it next week, right?
But we hope that Rob is successful with his deal, and I hope that gets through. That these are all different avenues we're trying to take in order to stop this. And I told everybody I'd have you up at 8:30, and it's that time now. I want to thank you all very much for all the great time.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.